This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
So, haere mai, welcome to the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society podcast. I'm your host today, Haruko Stewart, a member of the Sister City Society and a Japanese Senior Teaching Fellow of the Languages and Cultures Program at Otago University. I'm here today for our 14th episode in the studios of Otago Access Radio, located in central Dunedin. I'm right here with today's wonderful guest, Blake Turnbull, a lecturer at Otani University in Kyoto, Japan. We had too much fun in our last episode to have only one episode, so we will have another episode with him today. I've been excited about having him again with me here, right here. So, Blake, thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me again.
Great. We talked about a lot about you. And so today I want to find out, it's a main thing actually, about your books. Not just only one, books. Yeah.
Yes.
So he has already published two books about English learning, English education. Because as listeners, maybe as you know, I'm sure, English language teaching, learning is very, very popular and important in Japan. Mm. Because as you know, English is the official language in the world. Japanese is popular to learn, but still it's not the official language. So we have to really learn English or even other second languages. For Japanese people, it's quite common to learn English. English, definitely, it's compulsory. And then after that, maybe for a lot of people to learn the second language is quite popular, common as well.
Mm.
Yeah. So Blake, your books are really, really wonderful. Okay. I'm not saying this to flatter him, just because he's right in front of me. I used to be an English teacher as well at university and at a private school and everything. So, you know, humbly, as an, you know, experienced English teacher as well in Japan, I know it's very important to have a very good textbook, or it's not really a textbook, but, you know, dictionary of, how do you call this, like a dictionary of idioms? Because your thing is a chunk.
Chunk.
I mean, he will, Blake Sensei will explain what is a chunk, right?
Yeah.
What a chunk is for him, for learners, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so chunks are, yeah, it's hard to describe, actually. But
well,
basically,
it's a
piece of language. It could be a whole phrase, or it could just be a few words that are connected together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always used together as one sort of chunk of language.
Yes.
And if we learn them like this, then they just come out a lot easier when you're speaking. Rather than, you don't have to think about the order or think about the meaning of each word. You just use the one chunk or one sort of phrase, and it holds meaning as one sort of set.
Yeah, because as a language learner, it doesn't have to be English or English or Japanese, but as a language learner, we tend to remember, memorize, like, vocabulary, which is very important. But sometimes we don't know, okay, so this vocab, yeah, sure, I memorized it, but how can I use it?
That's right.
Yeah. That's a problem for a lot of learners. I mean, I used to have that problem as an English learner. I am still an English learner. I can never be perfect in languages, but that's why, I mean, it's a joyful keeping learning languages, right?
That's right. Yeah.
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 So you did your master's with us in in linguistics, and then you went to Kyoto University to do your PhD.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start coming out with this idea of publishing a chunk, kind of specialized chunk English learning book for Japanese learners?
So this probably 3 years ago, maybe. But I guess it's sort of always been in the background since I started teaching English in Japanese universities for Japanese university students. They the way they study English, for me, I didn't think it's the most, maybe not the most effective way to learn speaking, especially. Many people know, like, Japanese students often study for exams or for tests. Mm. And most tests, especially university entrance exams, they don't involve any speaking. It's always just grammar, translation, vocabulary, reading. Mm. So a lot of not so much speaking. So I thought this is a good way to help people improve their speaking. And so it's always just kind of watching learners struggle with kind of phrasing and
stuff. You've been asking yourself, oh, why is that? Why? Mm. I mean, they learn so many vocab and words and phrases and grammar items, but why still can't they really speak?
Right, right.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. And so you came out with this chunk. I mean, chunk is a chunk. I mean, we know the word, but the naming of this, dictionary, I love it too. So you came out with this one?
Chunk, yeah. Mm. So chunk is a word that... I mean, it's a word in linguistics as well, and people use this word. And my PhD supervisor from Kyoto University, he also wrote a book about what he called chunking. Chunking.
I love it.
Not a book of chunks, but about the idea of learning sort of through chunks and how that can affect students. And I read this book and when I was studying.
You were inspired by it.
Kind of, yeah. I always remembered about the idea of chunking or chunks in my mind. And so when I had this idea for this book, like chunk just seemed to be the word, the best word to kind of describe
it's what catchy
I was doing.
Too.
I think a lot of Japanese people don't know, a lot of like English learners don't know this word chunk.
No.
But the publisher sort of thought, they told me that every now and again this word comes out in books.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they thought it was the right time to bring it back.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like you said, I mean, once again, as an English, former English teacher, we did have this kind of theory of, using idioms, not just a word, idioms. So the theory has been there always, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't call it a chunk, blah, blah, but still idioms, not just... we were talking about this before, right before we started this, recording as well. Mm. In Japan too, we tend to ask our students to memorize words, but okay, so they remember a lot, but they just always wonder how we can use these words by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it has to be a phrase, idiom.
Yeah.
So using that vocab inside that little short, nice, natural phrase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the idea of chunks is that they don't have to think, for one thing. So you don't have to think about the grammar and all the words because it's very complicated and it takes a long time to piece it together, like make a sentence. And then you worry if it's correct or not and thinking too much. So the idea is you don't have to think is one thing. But also like with idioms, sometimes even if you know the words, when you put them in some combinations, the meaning can change.
Exactly.
And so you have to memorize like the chunk, the one set.
Yeah,
and
but without
that means.
Thinking really like grammar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but as an expression.
Yeah.
Well, it's the best way, really.
I think so. I think so.
Yeah. And really, I've completed reading these things. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I mean, no wonder. They were like number one sellers on Amazon Japan. It's a big thing, everyone. Amazon Japan, but it is. It is a biggie. Yeah. Really, really. Were you happy, of course, to hear that?
Yeah, very surprised that it did so well. And I think I put it down. The publisher did very well to kind of market it, and they took care of all of the marketing and got
once
it into
again,
many...
Humble Blake is coming out right now again. You are the one who wrote this.
I wrote it, yes. Yeah. But they did very good. They put it in the book. They got it in the bookstores, and they got a lot of like special sort of displays organized with the books and
he lives in Kyoto and I'm from Yokohama. I saw his books, like a pile of his books in major bookstores in Tokyo and Yokohama as well. I was like, oh, looks familiar. Oh, Blake.
I was very lucky. Yeah, I was very.
He looks better in the photo. No, I'm joking. No, he looks great.
Nature's good. Yeah, good
he pictures. Looks great in both. But yeah, so once again, it's a pity that I can't really show these books, you know, on Facebook for promoting this, podcast. I will show these, we're going to take a photo with these books. But still, it's a beautiful book and it's very nice and thick and it's got really, really, really useful expressions. So I wanted to ask you, so how did you select all those very natural, everyday use kind of idioms? Yeah.
So when I was writing it, I guess I probably took maybe 4 months to just select the phrases because there's 1,000 phrases in there. So it's a lot of phrases. I didn't plan to do that many, but the publisher said, like, if we can do 1,000, that's like a great number. So,
I mean, it's easy for him or her to say that. But
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it took a long time.
Henshusha-san, right?
Editor,
right?
She was very good. She's very, very nice.
She
was very, very nice and very, helped me along with the process. But I probably took, maybe 4 months to just choose the phrases, which I just collected them from, like, watching TV or movies or when I speak with, family or friends and just in English, like natural things that I kind of thought, that's a chunk, and just wrote them all down.
Great.
And they had to kind of categorize them later to make it a bit more
about your book too. It's situational.
Yeah.
Yeah, like for greetings, these chunks.
Right, right.
Yeah, for thanking somebody, here you are kind of things.
That's right. Yeah. Originally, they were kind of just all over the place,
when you are kind of like brainstorming yourself, right?
And we sort of categorize them like really common and then not so, like, slowly getting less and less common. Well, still common, but kind of tried to categorize them for like the daily use.
Yeah.
But then again, the editor said maybe it's better if we can find a way to categorize like the same theme or the same situations when you would use them or something.
Yeah.
So we managed to fit them into some
categories. And I noticed that it's not just about Kiwi English. It's actually about English. Doesn't matter which English we are learning, because as you know, in Japan, American English is kind of the most common English that they are learning, right?
Yeah, it is. I always try to be very kind of conscious of where the phrases come from, or, English, if it's American or if it's British, I kind of think it's okay.
Yeah.
I try not to include too many local variants on like New Zealand English.
I love them though.
I also,
but you had to appeal to a lot of, people, right?
Yeah, that's right. So a couple of times, even in like the final time when, for example, there was a professional narrator would narrate the phrases, and she was American, and sometimes she would question like, I've never heard that before, and then I realized like, okay, that's a New Zealand phrase, or that's something we say here, so I'd kind of have to change it. And
that's interesting.
So yeah, sometimes I don't even realize if it's not standard.
That's why, maybe, because, I mean, sorry to talk about this, but it's interesting. It was like about restroom, bathroom.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, where is the expression? Oh, where is the loo, please? You tell me where the loo
where's
is?
The loo? Yeah,
but
yeah.
Loo is very British / Aussie / New Zealand.
Yeah,
Kiwi,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you did mention that.
I put
though.
It in the explanation
section underneath.
That's right.
But you did present the restroom thing.
Restroom, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, it's kind of Japanese people look for the standard American English.
Yeah.
The most. That's what they learn, like you say. But some people really like to learn like British English or regional English, like Kiwi English and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to, I think, include the information.
Yeah.
But I think in general, it's better to stick more.
I know.
Standard English.
Yeah. I noticed that. I thought, okay, he's really going for like universal English.
Right.
Great.
So I have to be careful. Even like the spelling and stuff, like I often put like the U or something or Yeah.
So I know, center.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to be careful
color.
Not to mix that up.
Yeah, some expressions like a lift for an elevator.
Yeah, everything.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So that's great. And, you can maybe come out with a Kiwi English chunk kind of dictionary next time.
True, yeah. I've never seen a Kiwi one, but there are certainly British English books in Japan, quite a few.
Yeah.
It's kind of becoming maybe more popular. The same publisher actually has a British phrase book for British English. So common. Maybe not common, but
it is getting more common. And I have to admit, American English, yeah, because of our relationship with the U.S. and everything, but it's kind of the most commonly learned English. But still, British English is very popular as well. Some people really go for British English.
They do,
They prefer that.
Right.
Yeah.
Same, like some Japanese students really like the Kansai Ben, Kansai dialect.
Exactly.
And I guess now, like we spoke last time about the JET program, there are more variation of English, like a higher rate of different English in Japan now with the assistant language teachers from New Zealand and Australia and Canada and the UK.
Great.
And more, varied types of English, which is good. So students get exposure to different types. That's good.
Oh, I love to hear that. I'm so happy to hear that because when I was learning English, it was always like American or at that time, Queens, but now King's English, kind of two of them.
Right.
Yeah. And kind of like, Kiwi English, what is it? And, but English is English and, English is different, but still it's great English. So good to have everyone.
Yeah.
Because some language schools were like limited to hire just British, native speaker teachers, blah, blah, blah. But they don't do that anymore, right?
No, I've seen a lot of applications now. Now require, they used to be, like you said, native speaker, must be native speaker, but now it's more like must have a high proficiency.
Yes.
So they accept like all types of English speakers, as long as you can speak English and teach it, they accept more, variation.
Yeah, that's great.
Diversity,
Yeah, because when I was an English teacher, some schools, some universities really did want to have just native speakers, but the places, the faculties that I used to work for really wanted to have non-native speakers of English teachers because we do understand how students feel.
Sure.
It's not intimidating because you can see teachers who look like you. And then you can actually hear their experiences as a learner.
Yeah.
It's a lot of kind of merits as well.
Yeah, very important. Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. So at your university, at your faculty, do you have a lot of different nationalities of English teachers as well?
We do, yeah. Mm. We have just two full-time teachers, but all of the English classes are taught by native English. Mm-hmm. Well, not native, but
Near-native.
Near-native English speakers, yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of variation, actually, which is good.
Really great. Good. Mm. Yeah, I mean, we need to get used to all sorts of different accents of English, right?
Yeah.
So getting back to your beautiful books here, right? So I mean, it was so quick that for you to come out with a second edition, the second book. I mean, he's got a maiden book, the first, very first, great book, yay. And how long did it take you? Just a few months? When was it?
From published to published to published, it was one year. It was basically a year between them. But yeah, the editor came back to me and she said, a lot of people, they want, take a break. Mm-hmm. And then after a few months, they feel like they want to write another one.
Yeah.
So she came back
with another 1,000 phrases.
Yeah.
Did she say that?
Well, this one doesn't have as much. I think it's got maybe 900.
Wow.
About the same size, though.
Yeah, I know.
So, she came back and we talked about the second one. And
your full month of thinking about which word, chunks of phrases. I should choose, so that life has started again.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, the second one, once you know the process, it becomes a bit easier.
True.
The first one, because I didn't know about the categories and stuff, it was sort of just find the phrase, and it took a long time to work out where to put them and stuff. But the second time, I decided the categories to start with, and then we could find phrases that match that. So it's a lot easier to do the second one much
but
faster.
But still, I mean, you had to come out with 900 phrases, idioms, right?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, my God. And can I share this with you? I mean, so the editor wanted you to come up with maybe 8 more books or 10 more books for another 10 years, right?
Yeah, I think they enjoy writing them with me. So I think, yeah, we'll try to keep going and do as many as we can.
Wow, until you run out of, okay, what phrases?
No more phrases.
Yeah, I mean, can I think of? Oh, that's great. Mm. And, you know, I would like to introduce a little bit of a few of the phrases here. Okay. I'm all ears. Yeah, we do hear this. For real, and tough luck, you lost me, never better. It's a no-brainer. Mm. I mean, 1,000, so I'm not going to tell you everything. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so good. I do hear and use these expressions. I mean, very often.
I think I try to find ones that are quite common in daily conversation or natural conversation. Mm-hmm. You often hear them on like TV or movies as well. So even if you don't use them, at least you can learn to understand them and if you hear them.
And what I like about this book is, of course, it's explained in Japanese, you know, what this means. Mm. And, of course, even with example sentences, so you know exactly how you use this expression. Mm-hmm. And I like this one best. You've got synonyms, like, you know, similar kind of close meaning expressions together with them, right?
So you can realize there's many ways to say sort of the same thing. And
And you've got boxes for ticking as well.
Yeah, that's all the publisher. They all sort of designed it.
Well, Japanese people like to see
tick
that.
Things, yeah.
And not show you, but tell you. It's got 3 boxes. So you have to, you know, go over this book at least 3 times until you memorize everything.
Right.
Yeah. It's very Japanese.
Yeah, it is very Japanese, yeah.
Yeah, very good. And I like this. I mean, okay, you've got your photo on the cover, the front cover, and you've got beautiful illustrations of you yourself as well. I mean, who did this? I mean,
they hired this really nice illustrator from Japan, and she did this sort of caricature of my face, and I'm not so sure why. It's me, but yeah, it's nice.
It's you.
It's a kind of version of me.
It's cute, kawaii. I mean, they've got even a, mustache here.
Yeah.
A little bit. Very good. And your spiky, cool hairstyle as well. And your fashion even.
Yeah, the shirt.
This is great.
They did design it very well, I think. Yeah, The illustrator did a great job, and I think the production, the way they lay the layout is also really nice. So I don't have anything to do with that. The publisher deals with all of that stuff. But
that's what I wanted to ask you. So how did it happen first? Could you share that with us?
So I actually wanted to write a different book, which was more about like the kind of problems or the common errors that I see many students make.
That's an important thing too.
That was my kind of original idea. Mm-hmm. And, every year I see the students make the same mistakes in class. And I thought if we had a book to explain those mistakes, it might help them to kind of, rather than just repeat every single time the same thing. But when I approached some publishers about this book and I spoke to this editor online, we had a meeting on Zoom and they said this is a okay book, but there are some kind of similar books to that already. And
they know everything.
They know everything. Yeah, they know like what sells or what didn't sell in the past and maybe.
This publisher specializes in English language books, dictionaries?
A lot. They have a lot of, a lot of language books, actually, for different languages as well.
Bere Shupan.
So Bere Publishing. And they do a lot of, like, educational books. So not so much like novels and stuff, but about learning and They have other subjects as well, like some mathematics and social studies.
So not just language.
Not just language, but they do have a very big, a good language selection of mainly English, of course, but also some German and French and those kind of Italian books as well. So they have a few others.
Mm. Originated in Kyoto?
No, it's from Tokyo.
Oh,
yeah. So spent a lot of sort of time talking to them online and stuff about them. And then, when I spoke to the editor, she kind of asked, like, well, how can we improve Japanese speaking ability? That was her question. And then my suggestion was with chunks.
Yeah, because that idea had been actually growing on you.
Right.
You told me in the last episode, right?
So that's where the idea came from. And then we started to write the book from there. So I guess I went in with a different idea and then we discussed it and we decided on chunk would be a good idea. So then that's how it came about, I guess.
And it did go well, very well.
And it went well, yeah.
So is this the way to kind of start writing your book? Like to actually you have to kind of do door knocking thing? You have to kind of find, okay, which publisher would be good for my book? And you approach them by email, I mean, at this modern time.
Yeah.
Not really door knocking.
No. Yeah, I guess. I'm not really sure the best way to do it. That's kind of the only way I figured I could do it at the time. A lot of publishers have like a no like proposal policy, so you can't actually approach them by yourself. But then if you look around, there's a lot of publishers in Japan, and some of them have email addresses or places you can send your proposals.
Yeah. Well, you've got to take action at some point, right?
I don't know how else to go about it if you don't kind of approach them first. Maybe there's like some I know some publishers have like competitions you can enter and stuff like that. But
yeah, for other things as well, like for poems or books,
picture books especially.
Make a debut. Right?
But quite competitive, I think. A lot of people apply. So,
And it depends on judges too, right?
Yep.
What kind of poems or books those judges write.
That's right.
So they've got their preferences.
Sure.
I mean, they are fair, but still, right?
Yeah.
So I think what you did is the right thing to do.
It worked out well.
It worked well. Yeah, it worked well for you, it doesn't matter ways. I mean, this worked for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. So that's a great idea. So let's do it, she said.
Yep, let's do it. And so we just started writing and it took, maybe like I said, four months to get the ideas.
It's a time consuming thing.
Even once it's finished, there's so much editing involved and so much checking and making sure there's no mistakes, and you don't want to publish with some typos or something. So she was also checking the Japanese explanation, making sure there's no mistakes, and I would also go through all the English to make sure that there's no typos, and there was other people would check to make sure there's no typos. And it was
double,
a lot of
triple
editing.
Proofreading.
Yeah. We probably read it maybe eight times to make sure there's nothing, like put the changes and then send it and they would fix it and then send it back and check it again and make changes.
Wow.
Probably seven or eight times. It took a long time just to make sure it's
maybe
correct.
You know which expressions are on page 113.
Not quite that much, no.
Ooh, Blake-san, you have to know them.
It's too many, too
drop
many.
Drop a hint. Drop the ball.
The drop section.
Drop section. That's great. And I'm so impressed by your Japanese for explanation sections. I know they did check, but still. I mean, I love your Japanese expressions, like translations for these phrases as well.
Try to keep that like natural. And I think, it's one of the positive things, the feedback that I get from the book is that it's even like the Japanese. From readers, it's like the Japanese also kind of casual Japanese, not so serious. A lot of books tend to use like very formal Japanese when you translate them, but this one is kind of more casual. And like the English is also very casual, so I tried to match the Japanese so it feels more everyday conversation, more natural.
Yeah, that's what we want to learn.
Right.
Like we were talking about it the other day, remember, like in, well, I don't know, maybe about now they don't do that, but when I was learning English, for nice to meet you was how do you do? Right?
Right.
I mean, it's not wrong, but I mean, you will look a little bit, okay, this person must be quite serious, so I cannot be so casual.
Right. And that was the idea for the second book, which I guess you're...
Oh, that's right.
That's the main idea for that was like to try
I love the title, 感じがいい phrase, like a pleasant impression-giving phrase dictionary.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just translating it by...
In English,
you know,
it gets
a bit
complicated.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. But that was exactly the idea. And again, the publisher kind of thought it would sell very well because Japanese people often worry about what kind of impression they give when they speak English and if they use a phrase that's too old or too stiff or too informal or too polite, they worry maybe they give the wrong impression. So this idea for this book was to give phrases that will give a nice impression when you use them and not too polite, not too casual, just kind of... And not too old, kind of natural phrases that are just sound nice.
Like, how are you? I'm fine, thank you. I mean, once again, it's no wrong at all, but you wouldn't really say that. I mean, I checked your expressions for greetings as well, and it was more like, not too bad, can't complain. Very, very useful thing that we hear every day.
That's right.
I mean, I didn't see I'm fine thingy here.
No, and that's exactly why I tried to not teach those, because they do learn those. But
anyway,
it feels very textbook, very stiff. Like you say, hello, how are you? I'm fine, thank you. And you, we don't really speak like that. So
I know, and fine has got another meaning too. Like fine is like, okay, are you okay? Like, oh, it's fine, everything is fine.
Right. Yeah.
But for you to be genki well, you will just say I'm good.
Good,
or, can't complain. Never better.
Yeah. I think it's in there too.
Those things, right?
yeah.
Very
so
good.
That was the idea for this one,
And do you use this text or these books and dictionaries with your students in your class?
I don't use them as like part of the textbook or part of the class. I try to use the information, like use the phrases, and we talk about them and we try to practice them or we use them in class. And but I don't make them buy my book.
Well, Blake Sensei, don't be shy.
I tell them.
You can use it as part of your textbook.
Yeah. I think it's on the recommended reading list, but they don't have to buy it. Yeah.
Humble.
it's.
But I'm sure they bought them. And,
I think some students do,
I mean, because they are very useful.
Yeah.
Without you putting pressure on them, I think they will like it.
Hopefully.
Because they are good. Yeah. And so for this one, I like those, words. I mean, phrases as well. So this one, it's more like a little, do you think the phrases here are a little bit longer than the first book?
Yeah. So the second book is full sentences, like a whole phrase, whereas the chunk book could be like part of a sentence or something. So it is slightly different. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can still remember them as a chunk, which is a good thing.
It is not just for like beginners, but for advanced students as well, for covering all the levels, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it can cover all levels. It's kind of, especially for Japanese learners, it's phrases that they probably don't learn in textbooks or like you have to kind of maybe go to the country, like go to English-speaking country or have English-speaking friends who would use these. Maybe that's the only time you would get to hear them. I don't think it's part of the curriculum or most textbooks. They don't cover these kind of phrases. So.
But they're very useful. And so in your class, I want to ask you about your classes, your courses, right? So what do you teach in your courses? How many papers do you teach?
I teach...
In Japanese, we say like, hitokoma, futakoma, like that, right?
Koma, probably maybe 8 koma, maybe a week.
But listeners, please understand, 8 are a lot because Japanese classes are
90-minute long classes.
Yeah, so it's more like 16 classes.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess you get used to the longer time after a while.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, so 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8,
Eight courses, eight classes.
Yeah, so well, what do you actually really teach in those classes?
So kind of a combination, a lot of English classes, of course, for different levels.
English conversation
Mainly
classes?
Mainly English conversation classes. Mm. I teach one advanced, like reading comprehension class as well. But mainly just I try to focus on the conversation, mm-hmm. like kind of more like just practice using the English they already know. Because like we said, like they study so much and they learn so much vocabulary, so many grammar points, and they know all these things, but they just don't have a chance to practice using
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So my class is mainly just, we don't do, there's no test, there's no new vocabulary, new grammar.
Oh, wow. I wish I knew that course and I wanted to be a student.
Yeah, that's right. So just practice
how
using
How do
it.
You assess, though, like Through, how like, well they did in the course?
So we do have presentations. We make
practical things.
Yeah, we make videos. We do make posters.
Wow.
More like try to vary the type of things we do. If they have to, they write reports, but I try not to. Mainly just like go out into Kyoto and take videos and edit them and make it like YouTube videos together.
It's so now. That's good.
Yeah, just using English more natural and kind of creative, more unique ways. I think
Generation Z, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
they must be enjoying that.
I think they like it, yeah. Oh. It takes them, many of the students aren't used to that kind of thing, so they kind of maybe a bit surprised when I say, right, go out into the city and let's make a video, but they seem to enjoy
Great.
It.
Great. Mm. So do you just kind of talk to strangers on the street and ask them to be interviewed?
It depends on the class. So sometimes we do interviews with foreigners in Kyoto and try to, you know, find out like the problems they have and make solutions to how to fix, you know, issues for foreign tourists in Kyoto is one of the classes, or sometimes depends on the topic of the video. It could be like promote Kyoto, like make a tourism video for Kyoto. So they go to temples and explain things, or choose a cafe and go and kind of introduce parts of Kyoto. Or sometimes they can make a video about Japanese culture. So they choose something about culture and make a video about that, explain in English, and just many different things.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. can I be your student?
Anytime.
I mean, in Japan, there are not many mature students, right?
We have no mature students almost.
Really?
Yeah.
They should.
I think so, but it's kind of just an extension of high school almost. Like everyone just moves through the same age. You don't really, maybe you skip 1 year, like if you repeat.
That's the thing that we started talking about like in the last episode, right? In Japan, it's more like a kind of straight, like, okay, from high school to university. And then when you're a third year student, you kind of look for a job. And by the time when you graduate, you know which company you're going to work for.
Right, yeah. And everyone's the same age in each year group. It's just kind of the same as high school in that sense.
So. I mean, it's great fun, but good to have like those inspired mature students as well,
right?
I've got like three mature students in my class in my new course, which started this Monday.
Great.
So, well, that's great. And then any other courses? So that's one.
So those are kind of the English courses that I teach. I also teach, what else do I teach? We have some more culture-based courses as well.
Great.
So I teach a course about British culture. one of the seminars that I teach is about learning about the British culture through Harry Potter. Harry Potter.
Japanese people are big fans of Harry Potter
they
still.
Love Harry Potter, yeah. It's very big.
They've got even a Harry Potter museum or something,
right? Big studio tour and like in USJ, the theme park, they have
still
big Harry
going
Potter.
On.
Very, very popular. So it's quite it's an interesting course.
Yeah,
because they know Harry Potter so well.
Yes.
So then we can use that to teach, this is real British culture, or this is Harry Potter, but this part is real culture. So they kind of know already, just have to make them realize what's real.
Mm. So you must be a fan of Harry Potter now.
I do. I am. Yeah, I do like
You had
Harry
to
Potter.
Read everything,
Yeah,
right?
That's right, yeah.
When you were little, Harry Potter was still already there, right there.
No, I used to read them when they came out. I was about the same time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How old do you think you were when they, well, I mean, J.K. Rowling first published
when
it?
When it first published, I think...
You see, these days, time goes so quickly. So if you think it's just 3 years ago, but it could be 10 years ago, right?
I think I was young when the first one came out, but... Mm-hmm.
Not like a kid.
Maybe 5 or 6.
Oh, well, it is a kid.
Yeah.
When you started learning karate.
yeah. I didn't start straight away, maybe. Mm-hmm. But then the later books, I was, you know, waiting mm-hmm. for them to come out. And I think they must have finished. The last one came out maybe when I was in high school, I think. So I was still reading them.
So you were the right generation for Harry Potter.
I was the generation.
So you understand how they feel, your students feel.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So you learn expressions and everything and cultural things about England through Harry Potter.
Yep. Mm. And we also have some like a Japanese American culture, American history course.
Wow, you're teaching it. I think I remember you told me.
Yeah, it's difficult.
You had to learn.
Yeah, I had to learn. Yeah.
I mean, could you share what kind of things? I mean,
we cover things like the
American
history
culture
of like the slave culture, like history,
a serious thing too.
Yeah, and like why America becomes such a diverse culture nowadays, and politics, and we study lots of things about it. This is a short course, kind of like an introduction to American culture.
Good that you cover both.
Yeah.
British, American, Because once again, like we were talking about the languages, they are different, but kind of we are English-speaking people.
Yeah.
Kind of, but... With different cultures.
Mm.
Yeah. So different, but the same together kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So cover both. Yeah. So a bit of culture.
Why don't you teach Kiwi culture?
I do have another course on like the Commonwealth countries.
Okay.
So we do talk about like the old British Empire and like when New Zealand and Australia, Canada was part of the...
Wow, you do go for serious stuff as well.
A lot of, mainly like just like looking at the cultures in those countries. And
not so like deeply into those, but still cover them.
Yeah, just cover them. That's like a whole semester of just those countries. So we do get to, you know, do a bit of detail about them.
Of course.
Not just like the main ones, but like the smaller colonies as well. So it's a good,
Well, I mean, we want to make them knowledgeable, like, about those things, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's an intercultural department, so we want to learn about many different cultures.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and any other courses, different courses you're teaching?
I think now that's about it. Those are, like, three culture courses plus many different types of conversation classes and presentation. We have a whole class about English presentations and kind of focusing on certain skills.
Mm. Mm. So how many students do you have in your classes?
Depends,
of course.
Yeah, but I guess most language classes are about 30 students.
Number, not too many.
Not too many, yeah. No. They usually make the maximum about 30, because otherwise it can get difficult.
Yeah.
You know, you teach many, many more. I think our students we have like 100 or something in our first Japanese classes.
Good old days.
Old days.
Not these days.
No.
Please join me. Language learning is fun. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm. Oh, wow. And how many co-workers, teachers, do you have in your department?
My department probably has maybe, 10 or 12.
Okay.
But they're all, everyone specializes in different things.
Of course.
The English, we have, I think, 6 in the English department or English course, or English or European studies course. So we kind of, the English world, we have about 6 or so, yeah.
Oh, and then like you said, teachers are from everywhere, like from England, America, Australia.
Yes. A lot of places, a lot of the part-time teachers come from many places. Mm-hmm. The full-time teachers, just me and a Canadian guy and a Japanese staff.
Mm.
And then we have a lot of part-time teachers come in to teach, because like English is a compulsory yes. subject, so there's everyone has to take it. So there's a lot of English classes, so we need a lot of teachers just to come and help cover those classes. So then we have many types of,
I was teaching English at Waseda University, we had 100 staff members.
Right.
Because they do have it's a very small class of 4 students in one class. Yeah. It's a conversational class.
Right.
And twice a week for every student in all the departments in Waseda.
Yeah,
so, of course, we needed 100.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do your students, whatever they major in, they do take your courses?
English courses?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing the same thing,
same
too.
Same thing. Every student, no matter the...
Great.
Yeah, they all have to take English.
That's a difference between my era and their eras.
Mm.
Because everybody, whatever, like you major in maybe science, but you still need to learn English.
Yeah. Yeah. I think now Japan, like English is compulsory from maybe the 5th year of elementary school all the way to 2nd year of university. So all the students have to study English.
Great.
So it's good, yeah.
I mean, like I said, everybody had to learn English in my generation too. Mm. But because you are going to be more specialized in something when you are a university student, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you are a science person, maybe you do have English classes, but it was more like a conversational class that maybe we didn't have to take before if you don't major in English.
Right, right.
But at that university, they had to, whatever you even, I don't know, anything, all the departmental students, they had to take this conversational class. So you are doing the same thing.
Yep.
It's a thing that is happening to students these days.
Yeah. All the universities I've been a part of in Kyoto have all had to do that. So I've had students from all faculties, like law, social science, economics, and not just like international majors.
That's great because we need to be able to communicate with international people for anything in any fields, right?
Mm, yeah, that's right.
Okay. And then, I wanted to talk a lot about this book, so I still want to, but I need to ask you about your family life in Kyoto.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So Blake-sensei, should I call you?
No.
Blake-sensei has got 2 kids.
Yep.
2 gorgeous, beautiful, lovely kids.
Yep, I have,
And you've got a lovely Japanese wife.
Yep.
Yes. So how is your family life in Kyoto?
It's great.
Good to hear.
We have 2 kids. One is 4 and one is 2.
Mm.
And so 4-year-old goes to Japanese kindergarten, Yotien. And then the younger one is at the daycare, Japanese daycare now. So they just go to like a regular Japanese daycare and kindergarten. And so they speak Japanese well from that.
Uh-huh.
And then they also speak English to me and my wife. My wife, she speaks to them kind of both languages.
Mm.
We were sort of worried when the first one was born about maybe they won't be able to speak English. So we tried a lot, very hard, especially the first child, to really make sure he could learn to speak English. And, it was like songs and a lot of books. And we both, like my wife also tried really hard to speak English to him a lot. And so he has, developed really good English, actually, which is
great. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that as a TESOL specialist.
You know,
for your kids, you wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried because I do study my research also on bilingualism. And
that's right.
So I remember reading a long time ago this statistic, like depends on the situation of the family, depends how well they will learn to speak English. And in our situation, my wife and I, we speak Japanese together.
Yeah.
And of course, the society was all Japanese and the school and the, kindergarten, everything was Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So the only English was coming from me.
Sure.
And in this situation, the research said like it's only a 30% chance that they will learn to speak English. So I was kind of worried 30% is not so much.
No.
I wanted them to, you know, learn English for their themselves and their future and that kind of thing. So we tried quite hard with a lot of everything, like I said, books and songs and videos and speaking English. And
yeah.
He did very well too.
I mean, resources-wise, I mean, Japan does have a lot, right?
Yeah. And nowadays with like, even like Zoom to speak to family and,
YouTube. Grandpa, grandma.
Yeah, so it was good. So we're slightly less worried about it.
Great.
Now. Yeah, so he's did well. Of course, like, you know, if in Japan, once you start the school and stuff, it might change again and kids get older. I know their attitudes can change towards language and stuff. So we always just, not relaxing, but trying to just always encourage it to be like a natural thing.
Yeah, but you did well to plant seeds.
Plant the seeds so that he feels.
I mean, I'm sure they'll be interested in continuing to learn the language because that language and Japanese are both their languages.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Are they aware of like being like, oh, I'm half Kiwi, half Japanese, that kind of situation?
Yeah, we tell them. Well, the second one, only two, she doesn't really understand much at the moment. But
she is herself.
Yeah. But so our son, we always and tell him that he's from both and he has two cultures and two countries, two
Fantastic,
languages.
Right?
He seems to understand that, which is great.
And it's a very, very nice, great, you know, like situation to have two cultures.
Yeah. And we're very lucky actually at his kindergarten, we have quite a few, maybe three or four other children. So we have a sort of, we group together so that we can, everyone like from some Spanish Spanish father and American father. It's
Japan
nice to have.
Japan is changing.
Yeah, it is. I was surprised, actually, that there's so many in this one. Mainly this one year, I just happened to be, have a few different international families, which has been nice. So we made friends with them, and they all kind of, you know that they are.
Yes.
They all have these, you know, more than one culture and language.
And you can maybe ask them for advice and you do that for them
too. Sort of
things. Wow. Great. So you kind of get together and do a picnic or something
that. Yeah, that's right.
Very good. And then, okay, so kindies and, you know, those nursery schools and everything. The problem that we've been having in Japan was, because, I mean, Kyoto is very big too. It's not like Dunedin. So when both of you work, it's hard to kind of, you know, take them to kindies and pick them up and kind of, you have to kind of, you know, really organize everything properly. That kind of problem is still there, or is it really kind of, the country is kind of more helpful these days, like in those situations,
I guess,
like for kids.
Yeah, it's pretty helpful. Well, we've had pretty good experiences and, you know, the daycare has been, they're very accommodating. And, even the kindergarten, they finish it quite early, like I guess same as New Zealand, about 2:30, 2:45. But if you really need to, they can look after them for extra time. So I think it's quite accommodating.
Very flexible these days.
That's right, yeah.
So they can kind of wait a little longer for parents to pick their kids up.
You can apply if you need it. But most parents are there to pick them up, of course. But it is, there are options available for you.
Great. And then, so will you be in Japan for a long time from now on? I mean, you haven't decided. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's just an idea that you're thinking about right now.
Yeah, we think of it, like I said in the last podcast, like New Zealand is always a great it's a great place, and coming back
for raising kids, especially, right?
I don't know, I'd like for them to, you know, be able to experience both cultures and both countries and
when they're little,
Like learning and growing up in both societies would be nice, but Of course, it's a difficult, not so realistic, but we'll see. Yeah, we think about different options all the time.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's great, but it's hard, right? I mean, both are great countries, but in Japan, sometimes you have to go through entrance examinations.
Yeah.
exam hell, we call it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you have to take those exams for, what, like 6 or 7 universities?
Yeah.
And you have to pass at least one of them, and then you can finally go to university. Yeah.
even some, you know, junior high schools have exams too, and like cram schooling, it seems very intense.
Yeah.
We never had anything like that in New Zealand.
So. Yeah. But I mean, you are a very positive person, so it's good to experience these things.
Yeah. No,
and I'm sure you as a family unit, you help each other and you sort things out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, we might have the Turnbulls back in Dunedin sometime.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to ask you more, but it's time. So once again, where did the time go?
Yeah.
I hope you have had fun listening to Blake's exciting stories. Okay, so thank you so much for joining me on the show again.
Thank you.
Blake. We have to wrap this up. Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
So please follow the Society and hear about our upcoming events. You can follow us on Facebook. If you search for the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society, Otaru is spelled O-T-A-R-U. We also have an email newsletter that you can sign up to. You can message the page on Facebook or email us directly at dunedinotarupodcast@gmail.com to sign up. Okay, well, be sure to join us again next month for a very special show. Have a nice day, have a nice week, have a nice month. お聞きいただきありがとうございました。またね、または、see you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.